Chris and Chris Talk Movies.
Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Chris Ferry, and of course, this is my co-host.
My name is Chris Huddleston.
Today, we're both very excited to be talking to you about the film Lady Bird.
I hate California. I want to go to the East Coast.
I want to go where culture is, like
how
New
in the
York,
world did I raise such
or
a
at least snob. Connecticut or New Hampshire, oh, where writers live in the
get
woods.
Get into those schools anyway.
Mom!
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail and then back to City College and then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody to do everything.
Lady Bird, is that your given name?
Yeah.
Why is it in quotes?
I gave it to myself. It's given to me by me.
Lady Bird always says that she lives on the wrong side of the tracks, but I always thought that that was like a metaphor. But there are actual train tracks.
What she did was very baller. It was very anarchist.
Put the magazine back!
She has a big heart, your mom.
She's warm, but she's also kind of scary.
You can't be scary and warm.
I think you can. Your mom is.
So, you're not interested in any Catholic colleges?
No way. I want schools like Yale, but not Yale because I probably couldn't get in.
You definitely couldn't get in.
Does mom hate me?
If you're tired, we can sit down.
I'm not tired.
You're dragging your feet.
You are so infuriated.
Will you stop yelling?
I'm not yelling. Oh, it's perfect.
Do you love it?
You both have such strong personalities.
When is a normal time to have sex?
You're having sex?
I'm ready. Just wanted it to be special.
Why? You're gonna have so much unspecial sex in your life.
We're afraid that we will never escape our past.
Whatever we give you, it's never enough. It's never enough.
It is enough.
We're afraid of what the future will bring. We're afraid we won't be loved.
You can't do anything unless you're the center of attention.
We won't be liked.
Yeah, well, you know your mom's tits, they're totally fake.
She made one bad decision at 19.
Two bad decisions.
And we won't succeed.
I want you to be the very best version of yourself that you can be.
What if this is the best version? What I'd really like is to be on Math Olympiad.
But math isn't something you're terribly strong in.
That we know of yet.
Do you have a synopsis for us, Mr. Huddleston?
I do. So Lady Bird is a 2017 film. It was directed by Greta Gerwig of now Barbie fame. And the synopsis from Rotten Tomatoes is a teenager, Saoirse Ronan, navigates a loving but turbulent relationship with her strong-willed mother, Laurie Metcalf, over the course of an eventful and poignant senior year of high school. And it also stars Timothée Chalamet, Lucas Hedges, Tracy Letts, and others. All right, so you, I think you said you'd seen this before, right?
Nope.
Oh, you hadn't. Okay, so it was first time watch for both of us. Okay, so what did you think?
You go. I always go first. You
me go
first.
Okay. So I guess spoiler alert, I liked this quite a bit.
I hated this film.
I hated it. It was terrible. I guess this is the only movie that I have seen that Greta Gerwig directed. I think the other ones, in addition to Barbie, she also directed an adaptation of Little Women, which I haven't seen. In some ways, it's kind of a standard coming-of-age film, but I think what set this apart from your typical standing coming-of-age film is how well-written the characters are. I mean, everybody in this, because some of these characters could have been pretty one-dimensional or two-dimensional, but they feel, even I was thinking down to, so Saoirse Ronan's character, Lady Bird, which is what she wants to be called throughout the movie, attends this Catholic school. And I was thinking, you know, even the, like nuns a lot of times in movies are sort of a punchline, but even the nuns felt like real humans. You know what I mean? Because there's a one older nun who's sort of like the, advisor or guidance counselor, and you know, talking to her about, because the kind of the main thrust of the movie is she lives in Sacramento, and I wonder if this was somewhat semi-autobiographical, because I, in just kind of reading a little bit, Greta Gerwig is from Sacramento, so I wonder if this is, you know, kind of about her. But so Lady Bird, they live in Sacramento, but she wants to go to school on the East Coast, which is this constant friction between her and her mother, because she just says, we can't afford it. So there are some scenes with her meeting with this nun who's the guidance counselor, and, you know, talking to her about getting, and I thought even those were written in such a way that they felt like real people. The Laurie Metcalf, I didn't even realize. So I would imagine most people know her best from Roseanne. And for the first 10 or so minutes of this movie, I didn't even realize it was her. Mm. I was like, wow, that's Laurie Metcalf. And she's, I mean, everybody's great. She's great. And the, you know, she's not a villain, but the main area of friction is between Lady Bird and her mom, them just, yeah. And, you know, having never been a mother or a daughter, I only know about this from conversations, you know, with women, but, you know, I think this is pretty common that mothers and daughters butt heads a lot. But the, you know, the relationship between them is really interesting. The father, what did they say his name is? Tracy Letts. He's this character actor that you'll see pop up in movies, and he, I always think, is great. And, you know, it's sort of like the mom is the bad guy and the dad is the good guy. And you find out at one point in the film that he has lost his job and he's suffered from depression for years. So, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling, but Saoirse Ronan is, I mean, she's just fantastic, and, you know, obviously has gone on to be a star. But even the small, you know, characters are in this are so well written, and that's what I think I liked. And you have a early role from Timothy Chalamet, who, you know, he doesn't have a big part in the film, but obviously, you know, he's an A-list actor now. So I don't know. I've rambled for a while. What about you?
I agree. I agree with everything you've said. I think I saw an article that was sort of like, is Lady Bird autobiographical? And then the first, I didn't really read it. The first line was like, no, but I had the same thought, because it's so specific and mm-hmm. it feels so true. And, you know, I thought only someone who, you know, kept notes as they were going through their senior year of high school would be able to draw on the specificity of these universal moments. But there's just something so grounded and so true feeling about all of it. Saoirse Ronan is amazing. I mean, she's really, really carries the film. I agree with you. Everybody does a great job. Laurie Metcalf is, what I loved about the portrayal of the character of the mother was that, in addition to the difficulty, which, you know, is very clearly drawn, there's a ton of love there, mm-hmm. right? So it isn't sort of one of these after school specials where there's an evil stepmother or something like that. It's her mother, and she clearly loves her mother. Like, mm-hmm. the two of them clearly love each other. But, you know, the teenager feels like her parent doesn't understand her. And the dad does frequently. He's like, you know, she'll come around, or give her time. You know, this is hard for her. Mm-hmm. And they don't really get into the psychoanalysis of anything. But, you know, she does at one point say, well, my mother was an abusive alcoholic. You know, Laurie, yeah. The mother character says that. So you get little, you know, well, that's a pretty big breadcrumb, but they don't have a scene where it's like, you know, unpacks all of that. But mom's doing her best, right? Dad's mm-hmm. lost his job. There's a lot of neighbors and all the other people who managed to do well financially in their lives all around them, live in bigger houses, and they didn't want to be still in that house. They had hoped to, you know, buy up a bigger house, but things didn't work out that way. And Lady Bird at one point sort of pretends to be live in a different place, her sort of dream house on another street that they pass on their way to school. She tells, so there's the popular kids and the popular girls. Parents have a lot of money, and it all just feels very true. You mm-hmm. know, we can talk about little minutiae like this as examples, but the point of it really does feel like being there again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not really enjoy high school. People are like, those were the best years of my life. I'm like,
no,
not me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Not that it was all miserable. I had a good time in high school. It just wasn't like, if you're looking back and you're thinking my senior year of high school was the best year of my life and I'm 50, you're kind of like, I'm so sorry.
Those people that peaked in high school. Yeah, I was the same way. I didn't have a miserable experience in high school. It was fine. But yeah, I wouldn't want to go back and repeat that, you know. And it's always been funny to me how many, you know, like how many movies there are about prom. Mm. And I just think like prom was fine. But I, even as a kid, I was just kind of like, is this it? Like people, you know what I mean? It's like, I certainly do not look back and think like, oh, my senior prom was one of the seminal events of my life. You know? Right. I mean, that they make all these movies about it, you know? Yeah. And, you know, something that I thought was interesting about this, again, in the three-dimensional portrayal of the characters, is there, again, there aren't any really villains in this. You know, one of the, now, you know, this is kind of a dramedy movie, but, you know, one of the big tropes of the 80s is the rich, you know, the mean rich kid. And even with this, even, you know, the semi-mean kids aren't all that mean, you know? I mean, they're pretty human. There aren't any, you know, there are some parts where kids are kind of mean to each other, but for the most part, they treat each other reasonably well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do. And I think it does, there are familiar tropes and characters, right? The nuns. So she ends up going to prom with her best friend and the two of them sort of end up dancing together. And there's at least one shot of one nun looking sort of disapproving.
Yeah.
Keeping a close eye on that. But the nuns aren't monsters. And, you know, that's something you see again and again. They're people. Everyone's people. The rich.
And I went to, not to interrupt you, but I went to, it wasn't high school, but it was elementary school. I went to a school run by nuns. It was the monastery, you know, they lived there. And
yeah,
as kids we were a little scared of them, and you know, they seemed sort of alien to us, just as I mean your teachers in general do when you're a kid. And but then my sister went to the same school and was 6 years younger than me, and I would go back sometimes to, you know, to pick, once I was driving, to, you know, pick my sister up or whatever. And, you know, you saw the nuns as much more human than you did when you were 10 or 12 years old or whatever, you know. So, yeah, like I said, nuns are often punchlines in movies, or they're scary, evil characters.
And at the end of the film, I mean, she spends most of the time hoping to get into an East Coast college. And I think she ends up getting into NYU, doesn't she? She gets financial aid.
I think it was NYU, yeah.
And so at any rate, there's a whole scene about going to the airport, and that unfolds with some drama with mom. And but then we get to see her in New York. So she gets what she's been yearning for, and it doesn't. What I love about it is, frequently we see that played one of two ways. We either see like it's the happy ending where the character gets to New York City and it's everything they ever dreamed and they finally come into their own and this is it. And now cue the up-tempo music and the rest of your life begins. Or I've made a horrible mistake and oh, you stupid rube. You know, why did you think that moving to a place like New York City was going to solve everything for you? It's a dog eat dog world and it's the opposite, right? It's crushing.
Mm-hmm.
And like every other, you know, familiar feeling moment in this movie, Greta Gerwig does the really smart and thought provoking and true choice of it's somewhere in between, right? Mm-hmm. It's what she wanted and expected in some ways, and it's not what she wanted and expected in other ways. And we don't get that long of her in New York. Like she goes to a party and she meets a guy, and we see it playing out with her that this is not what I expected. Again, and just moment to moment, you know, there aren't big sweeping life-changing things. It's just how life is like, you know. And you know, and what the whole movie makes me think about is how we end up looking back on these seminal times in our lives and sort of cherry pick the parts of it that we choose and want to remember for better or for worse, because it kind of makes a cleaner narrative. It makes an easier story to relate. Right. And that's how these sort of cliches, coming of age cliches, get built. Is it's just easier to remember as that was a terrible time, or, oh, that was an amazing time. But if you really get into the details of it, you're like, well, there was a lot of both going on, right? There's a lot of confusion and fear and excitement about a variety of different things that maybe aren't as easy to explain or relate things. I mean, at my age, I'm already starting to forget. People are like, oh, remember we did that thing? And I'm like, oh yeah, I totally forgot that we did that.
Yeah.
Well, nope, never been there. Like we were there together. And I was like, we were, you know, it's big swaths of it are just gone.
Yeah.
I don't have a bunch of thesis stuff to get into. I don't want to wrap up talking about it after 15 minutes. I had hoped that our friend Melissa Dimitris was going to be able to join us, and she's just swamped with work and we couldn't make the scheduling work out. But I know that she has, you know, a lot of thoughts about this film. It's sort of her genre that she's really into right now, the sort of, you know, female driven coming of age. I think she's working on a feature. I know that she's working on a feature that sort of deals with these subjects. So that would have been cool. I have not seen Barbie yet. I'm eager to see other stuff that Greta Gerwig has directed, because clearly this is a woman that knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was terrific.
It's listed as her partner, so I guess they're not married, but her partner is Noah Baumbach. Is also, you know, done some Squid and the Whale.
I think he did the Squid and the Whale, right? I think particularly that movie strikes me in a lot of, I loved it because it was funny, it was painful, but it also felt like meticulously detailed and true in those details. You know, so while there are parts of it that are painted with sort of broad strokes, it never loses the sort of fine brushwork of all of these little moments that just feel mercurial and contradictory and dialectical and true, you know? And that movie really resonated with me too, because that central metaphor of the squid and the whale, that exhibit, have you ever been to the Museum of Natural History?
Mm-mm.
So they have these great dioramas We do see a scene in that movie where he goes, he talks about going to the, there's this sort of ocean, whole wing of it that's, you know, oceanic life. And there's a giant hall that has a blue whale. It has a life-sized model of a blue whale that's suspended in the space from wires. So you walk in and you're face-to-face with this giant replica of a blue whale. And just the sheer scope of it is unbelievable. I think it's a blue whale. Might be a baleen whale. I think it's a blue whale. Anyway, doesn't matter. It's a huge whale. And you go down, and then as you, all the exhibits and stuff are around the outside of the room, but you can kind of cross through the middle of the room, and there's a screening thing below it. So there's this enormous thing above you, as it would be in the ocean. You know, but it's what that museum does so effectively is let you feel proximity to these very lifelike replicas of animals. And over in one dark corner, in the far corner of the room, is this squid and whale exhibit. I guess that's a sperm whale. Those are the ones that eat squid. And it is a sperm whale battling a giant squid trying to eat it. And there's just something about, it's dimly lit, like it'd be really deep in the water, and something about the distance from it. There's no glass, right? Because it's just a diorama. It's just a man-made thing. So it's open, and you feel like you could reach in there. If you could reach far enough, it touches right there. But the scale of those things, it's terrifying. It, when I was a little kid, I was afraid to get close to it. And that's what the character describes in that movie. He was afraid to go look at it. And at the end, we're talking about that movie. At the end, he goes to that exhibit. And I just thought, there's just something so true in that specificity that I just feel like both of these filmmakers must have taking careful notes when they were kids and then been able to refer back to the, or have remarkable memories for the feelings and the, you know, just all the different kaleidoscopic things that were going on at that time in our lives with our parents and with our peers and with our first loves. And I think it's one of the reasons why coming of age as a genre is so rich. We've done a bunch of movies that are really coming of age.
Well, and obviously everybody goes through it, you know, if you make it to adulthood. So
we can and everybody has
relate in one way or another.
Yeah. We all have widely different experiences, but there are some sort of universal human experiences that we associate with that time that I think. And also, as we get older, I think there's a part of me sometimes that thinks, I wonder if this or that had been different, if I would feel like I'm a different person, right? I wonder how much of that stuff has shaped the person that I am today.
I don't know. But I think she really does a good job of, you know, when you're a teenager, it's such a weird time because you're almost an adult, but you're not. Exactly. And you live with your parents, and so you have to follow your parents' rules. But, you know, by the time you're a senior in high school, you have your own ideas and ways of looking at the world and all that. And I think she presents that really, she does a really great job presenting all of that.
And you sort of assume, seeing a movie about a character who doesn't eye roll her way through Catholic school, but there's a degree of just like, oh, school, nuns, pageantry. That when she gets to New York, you sort of what I expect as a viewer is, oh, you know, I'm done with all of that. But when she's in New York and feeling lonely and feeling, you know, in it like, you know, a fish out of water in this new place, she goes to church, you know, and I love that it's like, well, it's more complicated than that. You know, the church is a part of my life and it doesn't really get into, that's like an important aspect of the film, but it doesn't, you know, this is not some sort of a diatribe or an exploration of the Catholic Church in an overt way. Right.
No,
I just love that everything is, multifaceted every, mm-hmm. you know, and then yeah. it doesn't spend time, blah, 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 dissecting it. It lets us experience it with the characters. Lady Bird as a character is clearly a creative person.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do particularly well in school. You know, and manages to get a scholarship to NYU. At first, we think that the mother doesn't think that she can hack it, but it becomes clear that the mother just doesn't want her to go that far away.
Mm-hmm. She wants her to go to UC Davis, which is the
right there,
you know, the nearby school.
Yeah, and Lady Bird, especially early on in the movie, is an abrasive character, like mm-hmm. clearly the protagonist of this film. But, you know, like says, what you should go to UC Davis. And Lady Bird says something like bitingly disparaging. I don't remember the exact, you know, something like, I'm not going to go to that loser community college or whatever. And her dad is like, you know, your aunt went there and she's doing great. It's like, mm-hmm. got a great education. It's a good thing. And again, it's a little hard to like Lady Bird sometimes, I think, particularly early in the movie, because like a typical teenager, everything is, you know, a little pushed too hard, a little overdone.
There's one scene where she gets in trouble because they have a woman come to the school to talk to them about abortion. Yes. And it's like an anti-abortion thing. And
yes,
she pushes back on that and she gets, does she get suspended?
Well,
they suspend her for like a few days, right?
Yeah. I don't remember, honestly. I didn't rewatch it. It's been a week or more since I saw this. So I don't remember specifically, but I do remember the conversation that she had with that. I guess it's the principal of the school, I'm presuming, is that woman.
I'm not sure.
The nun that she was. And she plays a prank on that woman just mm-hmm. married to Jesus or whatever. They dress at the back of her car.
Mm-hmm.
And they laugh about it later. You know, I mean, it's a pretty harmless prank. And
yeah.
And the nun has a good sense of humor about it. She's like, oh, I knew that was you. I don't mm-hmm. know any of the other students here who would have come up with that. Mm-hmm. There's almost a love. There's almost an endearment. Yeah, it's just a really human, really well-drawn movie, and I think her experience by the letter of it doesn't overlap much with mine. Like, you went to a Catholic school. I did not. The most I can say is I was a teenager, and I did go, you know, I did go to high school, and I did have arguments with my parents and stuff. And so on paper, you wouldn't necessarily think that there was a lot that I could relate to in this, but you really step right into Lady Bird's shoes with her and don't even root for your protagonist the whole time. Sometimes you're like, you're just being mean right now, Lady Bird.
And she's not a bad kid, you know, she just kind of rebels and, you know.
She's a typical kid,
And she's also somewhat typical in that, like you said, she's not a great student. And, you know, there are people like that who just, you know, so much, like we've talked about, so much of the time movies present high school as the greatest time of people's lives. And there are people that who are that way. But there are also kids that don't particularly do well in school for whatever reasons. And it's not that they aren't smart. She's obviously very bright, but she just doesn't like school very much. And, you know, and there are plenty of people like, you know, there are the people who peak in high school and that's, you know, they were the, you know, the stereotypical, the, you know, the head cheerleader or the quarterback of the football team or whatever, and kind of spend the rest of their life, you know, never matching up to that. And then there are the people that don't do that well in school and then they go on and do really great things. They do well in college or, you know, they do well after they get out of school, you know, so, which I don't think is necessarily presented that much in movies.
Right. Yeah. I think that there's this enormous pressure in cinema to to sell someone easily digestible story that makes life feel kind of binary. Like it's either a happy ending or it's a comedy or a tragedy, right?
Now I do think, and I think, you know, you see this with Lady Bird. You know, one of the things that's terrible about adolescence is because of all the hormones or whatever, that at the time everything does feel like it's the most important thing in the world, you know, and you don't understand until you're right later in life how unimportant a lot of these things are. But when you're a kid and you're going through it and you can't see anything else,
yeah,
you know, these things do, you know, whatever the person that you're dating or the class that you're taking or whatever, it seems like there's, you know, like with her, to get into an East Coast college seemed like the most important thing in the world to her. And, you know, we don't see what the rest of her life is like. It's not like we get a, you know, scenes showing that. But if she'd just gone to UC Davis, like, what was it you said, her aunt, you know, would things have, and it's, you know, a lot of the other kids that she's friends with, that's their plan, is to go there.
Yeah.
Or go there for a while and transfer somewhere else. So.
Well, and the other surprise is that, you know, for everything she says and everything she indicates is that she just can't wait to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But before she goes, she's sitting in the, I presume it's the principal. It might be her counselor or something, but the nun.
Yeah, I kind of thought she was a counselor, but I don't know.
Such a shine to her, has read her college application essay, and she's written about growing up in Sacramento. And she's like, you know, you clearly love, you've written mm-hmm. with such love about Sacramento, you know. And that's a surprise in the film. Yeah. And I think even Lady Bird is a little surprised that that came through in her essay.
Yeah.
The woman, it's another refreshing thing, is the woman really seems to see this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And genuinely care about this kid. And that's always nice to see, because we see a lot of bad teachers and teachers who didn't think it was going to turn out this way and take it out on the kids and all that stuff. And those people exist.
I had an art teacher. So we went to the same junior high school and same high school in junior high school. And I almost majored in art. I didn't, but, I would always take forever on my projects. I would always just get them done like right after the, because I was sort of a perfectionist about it. And this teacher said to me, I hope you don't go to college, because in college they're going to, you know, you're going to have these deadlines and things. And it's like, you know, that sort of motivated me as a kid. We're sort of like, well, I'll show her, you know, I was going to go to college.
Yeah.
But it's like, imagine saying that to a kid. You know, it didn't like destroy me or anything, but there would be kids that would just be like, wow, maybe I'm not college material or whatever. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I sort of laughed about it a little bit, but it was a really mean thing to say.
I had a guidance counselor meeting and remember thinking as a 17-year-old or whatever I was at the time, this person was like, I'm not sure you'll be able to get into some of these places that you want to go. And I'm like, is it your job to discourage kids? You know, so I apply and I don't get in. Like,
and that's the exact same thing that happens.
You think
in the
it's
movie.
A waste of my time to apply? Like, what?
Yeah,
this is your job. You're supposed to inspire, I would think. I mean, sure.
Yeah.
Frame of reference and everything else, but just be like, aim low, kid.
Yeah.
I stopped going to see her. She's like, we should meet again. I'm like, I think we're good. I mean, I think, you know, I'm like, I told you what I want. And you think, I don't think you're able to do that. And I'll take it from here, lady.
Yeah. <You know>? Yeah.
Noted that you've hurt my feelings, right? Yeah. Consider me discouraged. I'm going to try and claw my way back up and go for it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But that's basically what happens in the movie. Everybody tells her, like, and I think the guidance counselor says, I don't think you should apply to these schools, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I never knew that. I never knew that story.
And apparently it's quite a, I mean, you see it come up again and again in these coming of age movies. And you're like, is this happening everywhere? I thought I found maybe it so absurd in my case. I was like, this is your job. Like,
I don't know if guidance counselors, if there's some kind of requirement or something that they have to, like, the kids have to get into, you know what I mean? Or it's like,
whatever you do,
I've got to get a certain number of kids accepted or something.
You're going to be meeting with a lot of kids with a lot of hopes and dreams. Whatever you do, do not encourage them.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, you started by saying you would recommend it, I presume.
Yeah, I thought it was great. A couple of little, so this was nominated for like 5 Academy Awards. I don't think it won anything, but you know, we talk about this a lot, how you don't see a lot of this type of movie anymore get into and I mean, this was only 2017, but it cost $10 million and it made $79
million. Wow.
Which is a real success for something. And, you know, I'm sure put her on the map. Greta Gerwig, I'm talking about, is in terms of a director. And then she goes on and makes a $1 billion movie.
Yeah.
But also Saoirse Ronan.
Yes.
You know, this certainly helped to propel her into stardom, I think. So yeah, I would absolutely recommend it. Definitely people, you know, it has that tone of something like Squid and the Whale. You know, if that's a movie that you're familiar with and have seen this, it's kind of a similar tone.
Yeah. And the vibe is a little different because it's Sacramento and not Brooklyn. And like Squid and the Whale.
Those movies are a little darker.
It's quirky without being Wes Anderson quirky.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have that bespoke sort of precious feel to it. It feels real. But it there's enough poignancy to it that it doesn't feel, it's also not one of these runaway comedies, these rollicking, you know, bonkers coming of age.
Yeah.
They're not all sex comedies, but you get the idea.
There's funny dialogue in this, but it's very real.
Yeah.
Feeling.
Yeah, they're driving along in the car and this is how we get introduced to her. She's having an argument with her mother and she gets to the point where she just had enough of listening to her mother. And they're just zooming down the highway. She just opens the door and jumps out of the car.
Jumps out. Yeah. Breaks her arm.
There's the movie. She's got this pink cast.
Yeah,
it's how you meet Lady Bird. She's the kind of person that's just like, when she's had enough, she just jumps out of the car. And at first I thought, oh, that's clever. It's like a metaphor. But, oh, no, she really must have jumped out of the car and broke her arm. But that's kind of the character we get to know across the movie. You know what? I'm just going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just going to do it. And she does.
Yeah.
So I agree. I highly recommend it as well.
So we haven't recorded in a little while, so maybe we could just kind of briefly talk about other things that what are some things that you've watched lately?
Well, I have started watching, this is a very different genre and vibe. You recommended on Max, there's an animated show called Scavenger's Reign that I started watching on your recommendation, and I'm maybe 6 episodes into it.
Oh, cool.
I just think it's great.
I've just watched the first, but yeah, I would like to. Is it what, 10 or 12 episodes, something like that?
I haven't even looked. I've just been sort of binging it. And when we get off of here, I will probably get the kids started for bed and I will binge 2 or 3 more episodes of it tonight. Like, it's
nice. I definitely thought you would be into it based on, you know, what I saw of it.
Yeah,
it's beautifully animated. I mean,
it's beautifully animated and it strikes this tone. There's a feature film called Annihilation. Did we do Annihilation on this show?
I feel like
we did. It would be an interesting one to do. There's this sort of, it's horror, but it's also there's something really beautiful. It's a sort of biological evolution and in weird and sometimes beautiful and sometimes horrifying ways. And this is a story about people who are sort of marooned. Their ship explodes and they end up crash landing on this alien planet. And it is rife with life. And there's all different kinds of crazy interactions that the life forms have. And they're just trying to survive, basically. And the planet is beautiful, but the planet is also dangerous. And
it's so creative in terms of, now I've just watched the first episode, so I haven't seen it nearly as much as you have, but it's so creative how just all the different creatures that they come up with that are so alien.
Yeah.
And they're all really unique, and it's a cool show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very well done.
And it sort of, the place becomes a sort of a metaphor where people start discovering aspects of themselves, right? Mm-hmm. In this crazy circumstance, this character has this experience and it changes them or makes them more themselves in some way. Mm-hmm. I really thought it was interesting. And I finally caught up with The Crown. So nice. They're going to release another.
You guys watching that together?
No, interestingly, Rachel loves British television. She loves all of the detective shows, and she has no interest in the royal family, and I don't particularly either, except a friend of mine was like, it's really good, you should check it out. And, yeah, I watched an episode of it, and I was like, that was good. And then I watched another, and sooner than later, I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
I came to it very late. I started watching.
Yeah, it's been a couple of months. I watched the first. How many seasons is it now? Because I watched the first one or two seasons.
I think they're halfway through the sixth season right now, and later this month they're going to release the second half of the sixth season.
Yeah, I watched the first couple. I started so with series that kind of like books for me. A lot of times I'll have more than one book going at a time. You know. And I kind of do the same thing with series. I started it. There's a new one on Hulu that maybe you and Rachel could watch together. It's called A Murder at the End of the World. I don't know if you've seen any preview or anything, but it has kind of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo vibes. Although this isn't kind of those. I don't know if you've seen. Have you seen any of those movies?
No.
Oh, they're.
I haven't read the books good. Either.
Okay, they're really good. They're kind of hardcore, where this doesn't seem to be this so far, but it's about this young woman who has written a true crime novel, and she gets contacted by, so there's this tech billionaire guy who, I forget what the actor's name is, who plays him, British actor. But anyway, she gets contacted to go to this retreat that he's having, and it's like 8 or 10 people, and he flies them to Iceland, and it's basically he's assembled these 8 or 10 people from different industries, or she's not from an industry, she's a writer, but that he thinks there are people who are super smart and can change the world in some way or whatever. I've only watched the first episode of it, but what I've seen so far, it's really good. Hmm. And it's a murder at the end of the world. So there's going to be, presumably it's going to be a murder mystery. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be sort of a Agatha Christie, 10 Little Indians kind of a thing where
it feels like that already. But, it's like you assemble this group of remarkable people and you're isolated. Yeah. And
but beautifully shot. And the acting is really good. The girl, I don't know off the top of my head, I don't know what her name is. She reminds me a lot of Kristen Stewart. She kind of looks like her and that sort of quirky, she's really introverted and kind of awkward. And, you know, she's around this, she's not rich by any means. She's just written this one book that's gotten a lot of acclaim, but a lot of the other people are super wealthy, you know, CEOs or whatever. And she feels, you know, you can tell she kind of feels awkward with these people, but and it might be, I don't know if Rachel likes that kind of thing, like mystery. It's not British, but you know, kind of mystery thriller-ish.
Yeah. We'll check things. It out.
But there hasn't been any like violence or anything in it, you know? So, but yeah, what I've seen so far, I think it's really, really good. So, and it's a nice winter time, you know, cause it's, they're in, Iceland, and so it's, you know, very snowy and cold, you know, so very, you know,
almost like a foreign planet or something. So yeah, very
good. There's a new Studio Ghibli Miyazaki
movie. It was the number one movie this week.
I just watched the trailer for it. I mean, obviously it looks good. Every movie that guy in that studio makes looks good. Obviously they're not all the best that they put out. Everybody's got their own favorites, but the reviews on this one are just, even by Miyazaki standards, the one quote from one reviewer was like, this is Miyazaki's magnum opus.
Wow, like, this that's is saying a lot.
This, yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. Looking at this career of filmmaking, this is the one. This is the big one, and you're like, this is the big one. Like,
yeah,
I guess I have to see it. I mean,
yeah. There's also, I don't know if you've seen, it's kind of interesting because I think they said it's the first time ever that there have been two foreign films in the top 10 in the box office of the United States at once. But there's a new Japanese Godzilla movie called Godzilla Plus One. And it's everything that I've seen on...
goes out to a fancy
party. I don't know.
So it goes to a wedding.
I don't know why it's called Godzilla Plus One, but it's Godzilla, and it's in Japan right after World War II. So it's sort of like them rebuilding from World War II. And I have not seen anybody online who has seen it who didn't just rave about it and say, like, really? It's fantastic. A Godzilla movie. Yeah. And it's,
because I don't think I've ever seen one I liked.
Let me see. I'm going to look here really quickly because
that's
remarkable. But like people are saying, like the budget is like $15 million, and people are like, the effects are as good as in a $200 million, you know.
How?
I'm sorry. It's Godzilla Minus One.
So I don't want to have anything to do with it.
On Rotten Tomatoes, with 111 critic reviews, it has a 97% rating.
Unbelievable.
And with 2,500 audience reviews, has a 98% rating.
Well, I'm going to definitely watch the trailer for that, because that's crazy town.
Yeah. And like I say, people are like, see it in the theater, because like, it's just so well done. Like I say, I have not seen anybody say like, it was okay, or I didn't like it. It's just everybody I've seen online. It has an 8.5 with 13,000 reviews on IMDb. 8.5.
That's just so... Because if you go, hey, there's that new Godzilla movie, I'd be like, pass. I'm just not interested in kaiju. I'm not...
The American ones are terrible.
Oh, they're horrible.
You know, so yeah, I'm intrigued. I mean, I don't know that I'll get to the theater for that, but I'm intrigued for it. So,
and we are gonna see each other in person around Xmas time, and we should watch something together.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've talked about fantastic. A couple things, but.
And what about for next time? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I don't know that I have any thoughts.
Do you?
I went through just randomly before we got on tonight and just sort of went on Max and Prime just to see like what stuff there is that maybe would be kind of interesting.
And kicking around.
If you felt like doing a classic, the original, which I haven't seen in a long, long time, the original James Cameron Aliens is on Max. I don't know how long it's been since you've seen that.
Many a year.
That might be kind of fun. Also, one that I've always wanted to see that's also on Max, I think it's the first Coen Brothers movie, Blood Simple. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, that's been a while too.
I've never seen it. And on Prime...
It's a slow burn, if I remember correctly.
It probably is, yeah. On Prime, there are some... So there are a lot of these. I've been kind of going back and watching these sort of like adult dramas that maybe we were a little too young in the 80s or early 90s to really appreciate. But one that popped up was Big Easy with Dennis Quaid, Alan Barkin, and Ned Beatty. That's from 1987. Have you ever seen that one?
Probably close to when it came out, not since
then. I've never seen it. The Two Jakes, the Chinatown sequel. Did you ever see that one?
Nope.
Never seen it.
Never even heard of it. Didn't know there was a sequel to Chinatown.
Yeah, so they made a sequel to Chinatown, and Jack Nicholson directed it.
I think it's telling that I have never heard of it.
I think it was viewed as not great. I've never seen...
Astound me, sir.
This might surprise you. I've never seen Clue, the original Clue.
Oh.
I've never seen. We talked about Dead Again a little bit, the Kenneth Branagh movie.
Yeah.
And then also another one that I think is our... I think is our favorite director, Sicario. Have you ever seen Sicario?
I have, yes.
I've not seen that one either. So anyway, those are just a few that I saw that, you know, we wouldn't have to rent that are just,
yeah,
you know, that Max and Prime were feeding to
Max,
me,
Prime.
So
ding, bang, dong.
We can think about it off. There might be something else that...
Yeah, none of those things are lighting a fire of excitement in my stomach, but I'm not saying no to any of them. I want to mull it over a little bit.
And we did talk about, maybe we'll leave this as a surprise, but we did talk about a Christmas one that we could watch when we get together.
Yes. So well, we can do that. We can do a Christmas fun thing live.
That'll be when we see each other, but...
We can either, I don't know that we do a recording while we watch again. I mean, that was fun, but... I don't know.
Yeah, we just talk about it after.
Anybody has listened or watched it, we could just watch it together and then record.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
While it's fresh off the presses. Okie-doke, Chris and ChrisTalkMovies@gmail.com. That's our handle. You can send us a message. You could like and subscribe. You could make a suggestion.
Suggest movies, yeah. Suggest,
exactly.
Sometimes we have our time figuring out what we're going to watch.
And, as always, or perhaps this is your first time. Either way, thanks for listening and joining us. We're on YouTube. We're on your favorite podcast thing. And I'm Chris and he's Chris. And that's us.
I'm Chris
and Chris. And we talk about movies.
It'd be great if we got to the end of like, it's Chris and Chris talk. Movies. I'm Steve and he's Bill.
And Barry.
And Barry.
We just thought it was better to be confusing. So we're not sure what we're going to do for next time, but we're going to do something fun, and we hope that you will join us then as well. And unless you have anything else you'd like to add right here at the end,
I think that's all.
Chris and I will talk to you all next week, baby. Bye.
Bye-bye.